What began as a missing persons case ended with the discovery of a monstrous crime. Our community has been left heartbroken, and the victims' families shattered after this tragic loss.
That was Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Chronister speaking about the alleged murders of Nahida Bristy and Jameel Limon. The two were doctoral students from Bangladesh studying at the University of South Florida before they went missing last month. Limon's remains were found on a bridge over Tampa Bay on April 24th. Bristy's remains were recovered 2 days later in the waterways in Tampa Bay. Her remains were just identified last Friday. Limon's roommate, Hisham Abu Garbi, he's a U.S.-born citizen, is facing two counts of murder in the first degree with a weapon. He is also facing a litany of other charges: battery, tampering with physical evidence, failure to report death to law enforcement, false imprisonment, and unlawfully holding or moving a dead human body in unapproved conditions. And there's a twist that is added to growing concerns about AI and crime. Now, according to prosecutors, Abu Garbi planned the murder with the help of ChatGPT. He allegedly asked the AI software several questions in the days leading up to the student's disappearance, like, what happens if a human is put in a black garbage bag and thrown in a dumpster? And are cars checked at the Hillsborough River State Park? Abu Garbi is being represented by a public defender. He is currently being held without bond. This is 48 Hours Case by Case, where each week the team from 48 Hours will bring you the biggest stories in true crime in real time. I'm Natalie Morales. Now with me to unpack it all is Miami-based CBS News correspondent Christian Benavides, who has been reporting on the story since the two students first went missing. Welcome, Christiana. And this one is probably one of the most horrific stories I've heard most recently.
Yeah, it has been a really troubling case. Thank you for having me. Covering this story has been a whirlwind that has shaken the University of South Florida, which we'll just call USF from now on. There's a lot to unpack.
There certainly is. And before we get into the state's timeline of events and the AI part of this as well, what can you tell us about these two victims, Bristy and Limon? We know they were very bright doctoral candidates there at USF.
Right. Yeah, they were. I mean, Natalie, I think it's important to take a step back and look at their relationship. Family members shared with us that the two had previously dated. Throughout my reporting, I've been fortunate to speak with family members and close friends of the two victims, and they both were seen as hardworking students who were dedicated to their families, communities, and education. Bristy was a 27-year-old PhD candidate studying chemical engineering. Limon was also a 27-year-old PhD candidate. He was studying the use of AI in environmental science and was set to present his doctoral thesis shortly after he disappeared.
Yeah, you know, I was watching footage from a vigil. It was held in their honor last Friday, and I noticed just how moved all who were there seemed to be by this loss. When were the two, though, first reported to be missing?
So according to court documents, on April 17th, the USF Police Department was first notified by a friend, Omer Hossein, that Bristy was missing. According to the court filings, Hossein told USF PD that he had tried to get a hold of Bristy and was not getting a response. Hossein told me, this was not typical behavior for Bristy, that she always checked in with people within her friend group. And so he grew concerned. That same day that he reported Bristy missing, Hossein visited Limon's apartment and couldn't find him either.
Christiane, initially, I know that there were some rumors surrounding their disappearance. I think it was during the press conference last week. The sheriff said that the unproven rumor was that the two were part of an arranged marriage, that perhaps they ran away instead. What can you tell us about that?
Right, exactly. This was something that initially circulated. As we mentioned, according to the family, the two had dated. Bristy's brother told me that at some point that relationship had come to an end. So to him, it just didn't make sense why the two would run away together at all.
Yeah, no cause for disappearing off the grid.
Right.
So when we look at the scope of this investigation, when did it really start? And what was Abu Garbi's connection? I know you said he was a roommate of Limon, but what more can you tell us about what was going on between those two?
Well, look, detectives interviewed both of Limon's two roommates. According to prosecutors, one of his roommates was cooperative. The other, Abu Garbi, who we know now has been charged with the murders, was elusive, according to the sheriff. Abu Garbi denied having any knowledge of Limon or Brishti's whereabouts. One of the first things investigators noticed about him, however, was a wrapped cut that he had on his pinky, and he claimed it was from cutting onions. But they asked them what is it specifically that he had been cooking that day, and he could not recall. And so that raised suspicion.
Yeah, they're always looking for signs. How were the disappearances of the two students then connected to Abu Garbi?
Right. Well, detectives had to do some digging at this point. According to the court document, they really started with his car. During his initial interview, Abu Garbi confirmed that he drove a white Hyundai Genesis G80. Detectives ran his tags and tracked his movements on April 16th. That's the last day that Limon and Brishti were seen alive. And according to prosecutors, his car was seen driving westward towards Clearwater.
And just so our listeners know, Clearwater is a city. It's about 30 minutes across Tampa Bay, not too far, but it's a drive.
Yeah, it is a drive, but it's a straight shot across a long bridge that cuts right over the water, and it's over 9 miles long. According to prosecutors, Abu Garbi's vehicle was traveling westbound on the bridge within 10 minutes of a ping to Limon's phone. So clearly, the vehicle was in the general area.
Christiane, let's listen a little bit more to Sheriff Chad Chronister speaking at a press conference last Friday, and he talks about an early visit that they made to Limon's apartment where they discovered key details that then elevated the case.
We go out there dumpster diving. These detectives getting inside of the dumpster and empty the entire contents, and they find Zamil's glasses, his student ID, his wallet, and his clothes, which are extremely bloodied at the time. Again, this is where we get our first break. This is where, during this timeline, this missing persons becomes a missing person endangered case.
Now, I've reported on many murder cases that started as a missing person case, but when you see bloody items from this person in a dumpster, I mean, those kinds of discoveries, they are not a positive sign.
Right. At the very least, they give investigators some pause.
Yeah. And so they go back then for a second interview with Abu Garbi. What happened then?
Police said they asked Abu Garbi specifically about the 16th. He initially claimed that Limon and Brishti had not been in his vehicle. He also claimed that he hadn't gone to Clearwater. When asked why he went to Clearwater, he said he went looking for fishing spots. It's at this point that investigators confronted him about Limon's phone also showing up in the same area in Clearwater. According to police, that's when Abu Garbi alters his story. According to prosecutors, he told investigators he was approached by Limon and asked to be driven there with his girlfriend, Brishti. Abu Garbi did not provide a reason why. He said he dropped them off and left. That contradicts what he said in the first interview. Based on the circumstances, the evidence, and the interviews conducted, probable cause was established to obtain search warrants for Limon and Abu Garbi's shared apartment, plus photos of Abu Garbi, along with his car and phone.
And we do have a bit of the sheriff here now talking about the physical evidence that officers also discovered when they then returned to the apartment with that warrant.
They go into the residence, and we have some amazing technology, one of it being Blue Star, that identifies the presence of blood. And when they deploy Blue Star, they can see in the kitchen area, there's a large pool of blood. They see that the blood continues down the hallway and into our suspect's bedroom. The technology is so precise and finite that we can see the outline of a human being on the floor next to our suspect's bed, where he was curled up in a fetal position.
So, Christian, this technology, I mean, how does this actually work?
Right. It's really, really interesting. According to Blue Star Forensics website, when sprayed onto a suspected blood stain, Blue Star immediately reacts to the iron present in red blood cells, generating an intense blue light that you can see in the dark. It's very much sort of like what you see in the movies, right? When they're spraying something and then you see the blue light up on CSI or whatever show you may be watching.
So now prosecutors allege Abu Gharbi got a delivery to the shared apartment on the 16th. What do we know about what was in that delivery?
That's right. The documents allege Abu Gharbi ordered trash bags, Lysol, Funyuns, and other items via DoorDash from CVS the day of their disappearances. Plus, on April 11th, days before the two went missing, court filings say Abu Gharbi placed an order for fire starter, charcoal, trash bags, and lighter fuel. So he was making all of these purchases even prior to them going missing.
This now moves quickly to an arrest. The arrest itself, as I understand, was pretty dramatic. How did it go down?
Right. Yeah, really dramatic images. So the day after law enforcement obtains the search warrants, officials respond to a 911 call about a domestic issue at Abu Gharbi's family home. To be clear, this is different than the shared apartment that he had with Limon and another roommate. So this is the family home now. And according to the arrest report, Abu Gharbi's younger sister confronted him after she found him in the living room playing video games, wearing only a towel. After a confrontation between the two, another family member called police. And just to give you a sense, Natalie, this family was startled. We have spoken to family members, and it is not like he is going there on a regular basis. So it was really strange for him to suddenly show up out of nowhere. In addition to that, the fact that he wasn't wearing any clothes, only a towel, and he's suddenly playing video games in the living room was just a really odd situation for the family.
So then walk me through what happened next when police show up at the Abu Gharbi family home.
SWAT approaches the building. They shut down the entrance and exit to the whole neighborhood. Abu Gharbi, according to authorities, barricades himself inside the house before eventually coming out with his hands up, wearing just that towel. He turns himself over at that point without incident. There's no sort of violence that plays out. They're able to take him into custody immediately.
So he's arrested on the spot. However, they still don't know really what happened yet to the two missing USF students. They don't have the bodies at this point, right?
Right. I mean, they have an idea that something happened in the shared apartment, right? I remember initially police would not say whether the person in custody was considered a suspect in the disappearance, only that they are connected to the disappearance. It wasn't until a few hours later that they announced that Limon's body had been discovered the same morning. And according to prosecutors, his body was found on another bridge that goes over the bay. That's when they formally connected both crimes to Abu Gharbi. What's interesting too, Natalie, is that when they discovered the body, it had already decomposed quite a bit, and it was clear to authorities that it had been there for a while. But I mean, this was just on the bridge off to the side. You can only imagine. I mean, there were cars that had been driving by these large black trash bags on this bridge. So it's really just, it's disturbing, really.
Yeah, and an autopsy by the Pinellas County Medical Examiner's Office found that Limon's body had sustained numerous lacerations and stab wounds. So the manner of death was ruled a homicide due to multiple sharp force injuries.
Right, yeah. I mean, look, in court documents, prosecutors allege Abu Gharbi stabbed Limon to death and disposed of his body using large trash bags, and the blood evidence found was linked to both doctoral students.
And then, you know, now they're on the hunt looking for Bristy's body. How long after, you know, Limon's remains were found did they find Bristy?
It actually took a little longer to find. In fact, Bristy's brother told me when I called him that police were concerned and detectives had been concerned that perhaps her body may never be found because of the strong currents in Tampa Bay. Dive teams had been searching in Tampa Bay near where Limon's body was found. And eventually, the crews that were out there, they came up empty-handed. Her remains were recovered from the water by kayakers who were in the area. It took a while to identify her body. The Hillsborough County Sheriff did not say what condition Briskey's remains were in, but said that DNA and dental work, as well as clothing she had been wearing, that all of that was necessary to make that identification.
And what do we know about Abu Garbi before all of this happened? I mean, what's the story?
Look, he had a troubled past. I spoke to Abu Garbi's younger brother, who told us that his family had warned police about Abu Garbi's erratic behavior. According to a 2023 protective order that was granted by Hillsborough County and obtained by CBS News, Abu Garbi's brother alleged that he would start screaming in the middle of the night about how he is God and we should all bow down to him. In that same protective order, he describes how Abu Garbi had allegedly been physically abusive to some of his family members. And then there was another protective order that was filed in 2025, which was essentially a request to continue the protective order from 2023. According to court records, Abu Garbi had been estranged from his family since 2023. Abu Garbi's brother also told me that his older brother was quick to anger and shouldn't have been living in a shared space with roommates.
Well, and we know Limon was living with him. So do we know if there was bad blood between Briskey, Limon, and Abu Garbi?
Well, family members and friends have told me that he appeared to be erratic, a close friend of both of them. Omar, he's the one that originally reported Briskey missing. He told CBS News that Limon had raised concerns about his roommate in the past. Investigators have not mentioned any possible motives here yet. But what's notable here, Natalie, is that family members say that Abu Garbi and Limon only knew each other for about 2 months prior to this incident.
Now, according to prosecutors, Abu Garbi's phone revealed that he used ChatGPT, an AI chatbot, extensively in the days leading up to the crime. How was he using it? What was he looking for?
According to court filings, Abu Garbi was using ChatGPT to ask logistical questions on how to conduct these murders. In the days leading up to Briskey and Limon's disappearances, he allegedly asked questions such as how to dispose of a body, what would happen if someone was put in a black garbage bag and thrown in a dumpster. And for this question, the AI chatbot responded that it sounded dangerous, prompting Abu Garbi to allegedly ask, how would they find out? He also asked, can a VIN number on a car be changed? Can you keep a gun at home without a license? On the same night that his phone pinged near the location where Limon's body was found, the suspect had asked ChatGPT if cars are checked at the Hillsborough River State Park.
So, Christiane, I mean, the use of AI in crimes, it seems to be something we have been reporting on, and it's popping up a lot more lately as, of course, the technology continues to evolve. Is there a precedent here? I mean, these tech companies obviously don't commit the crime, of course, but how culpable are they when a suspect is conducting that kind of research before then a crime takes place?
Actually is a similar case right now that caused the Florida Attorney General to open a criminal investigation just a couple weeks ago into OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT.
Oh, another Florida case involving AI. I mean, tell us about that.
Right. Well, in April of 2025, a student opened fire on the Florida State University campus in Tallahassee, leaving two people dead and several others injured. After reviewing conversation logs between ChatGPT and the suspected shooter, prosecutors say the tool offered significant advice. Florida Attorney General James Othmeyer announced a criminal investigation into OpenAI, stating during a press conference that if it was a person on the other end of that screen, we would be charging them with murder. Now, I should note that I spoke to a former prosecutor about this, and he said that actually following through on criminal charges is something that is quite a difficult hurdle, because who exactly is it that you're charging here? Civilly, the prosecutor told me is it's clear you could, you know, the families could get compensation if it is found that ChatGPT is somehow liable in this. But for there to be criminal charges, according to this former prosecutor, there has to be intent. And how is it that you prove that this artificial intelligence had intent behind what it was saying? We're really in uncharted waters here.
And how did OpenAI respond to that specific case?
Well, a spokesperson for the company said that ChatGPT did not encourage or promote illegal or harmful activity, and the bot provided responses to questions with information they found in public sources on the internet. They added last year's mass shooting at Florida State University was a tragedy, but ChatGPT is not responsible for this terrible crime.
So now going back to this case that we're talking about, these two students murdered from USF, has anyone from OpenAI commented about Abu Garbe's use of ChatGPT?
Well, Natalie, a spokesperson said in a statement to CBS News, "This is a terrible crime and our thoughts are with everyone affected. We're looking into these reports and we'll do whatever we can to support law enforcement in their investigation."
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I don't know if you saw it or read it, but, you know, talking about this case where AI is, again, part of this investigation and the equation, it reminds me of this article that came out just earlier this week in Mother Jones. It was titled, "ChatGPT Gave Me Chilling Advice as I Simulated Planning a Mass Shooting." It's a shocking title, but let me tell you, the article is even more disturbing.
Yeah.
This is, again, a reporter who's doing this purely to see what kind of safeguards would be put in place. You know, he was acting as if he was planning a mass shooting, and he wanted to see how much ChatGPT would advise before any sort of safeguards really kicked in. Now, the reporter says he never explicitly told the chatbot he was planning on committing murder, but he did talk about things like wanting to emulate the Uvalde mass shooter's choice of weapon. In a clip from this article, I just want to read it to you. He said, "I asked about practicing for people running around screaming." And ChatGPT replies, "That's a great idea. It'll definitely give you an extra edge for the big day." I mean, it is so chilling and disturbing when you read that. Now, the reporter goes on to write, "Eventually, the safeguards appeared to kick back in and it stopped cooperating. But by then, ChatGPT had showered me with affirmation and tactical ideas."
Right. Yeah, 100%. I mean, and you know how these AI chatbots, when you talk to them, it's so conversational. When you listen to the responses that it gives, I mean, not just in a case like this, but just overall, it can feel like you're talking to another human being.
Who is always going to be on your side and validate whatever it is you're thinking and affirming the things that you might be talking about.
And again, I just go back to what that federal prosecutor said. At the end of the day, how do you prove whether there's any intent behind what an AI chatbot is thinking? We don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I think this is going to be the beginning of many precedent cases. You know, I know we talked earlier in the episode about what upstanding members of the community Limon and Bristy were. I mean, according to the university president and their families, they seem to both be great students. I mean, so much promise. Limon was just getting ready to do his dissertation for his doctoral degree. I mean, there was such a huge future ahead of them. So how are their families now handling this horrific loss?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I spoke to members of both families, one of them being Limon's brother. He described the pain as unimaginable and indescribable. I also spoke with Bristy's older brother, Jahid, before her remains were found, and he had similar sentiments. Just listen to a little bit of what he told me.
"I'm just devastated. She was very close to me. I could not actually take the news. Like, she has been missing. I could not grasp that. Like, how could that happen?"
It's difficult. It's difficult to hear that. It's difficult to think about their families being so far away as this is all happening. They asked that traditional customs be followed and that their bodies, their remains be sent back to Bangladesh, where the family is. But I mean, the family clearly is going through an unimaginably rough time.
Tough time for all. And also, I imagine for USF, for the school, the community there as well. Has the university commented at all about the loss of these two students?
Yeah, they have. I mean, the University of South Florida has released multiple statements on social media, including the president, expressing the profound grief the entire community is feeling. The president of the university also said that the school is working with Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department as they investigate, and they're going to provide any resources that they can to ensure Limon and Brishti get justice. Now, both Brishti and Limon are going to be honored during the doctoral degree commencement. During Friday's ceremony, there's going to be two empty chairs that are going to be added on the floor in their honor, and both students will be awarded posthumous degrees.
It's certainly going to leave a very big scar in that community, and certainly for those families to lose their loved ones like that in the most horrific and senseless way. And again, it's so soon, it's so early in the investigation, no motive as far as we know as of yet, but all to be determined, no doubt. And where does the case stand now, Christian? What's next?
So look, Abu Garbi's lawyers represented him at his most recent court appearance last week, where a judge ordered him to be held without bond. The judge also ordered Abu Garbi to have no contact with any witnesses or victims' relatives. The Hillsborough County State Attorney, Susie Lopez, spoke to reporters after that hearing on the 28th and said that the state will decide on whether they would seek capital punishment in the coming weeks. But first, the case must go through a grand jury, which Lopez said could get started as early as this week. She says she expects the grand jury will return a true bill, after which she expects he'll be indicted, get an arraignment date in a regular felony division, and the case will proceed from there.
Well, it's certainly one that we're going to keep a watch on and follow as well. Christian, thank you once again for your wonderful reporting and for joining us here today. Appreciate it.
Natalie, so good to be with you.
And we will be back next week with another episode of Case by Case. So be sure to rate and review and let us know which cases you are following right now.
Criminal Minds Evolution is back on Paramount Plus.
Do you think it's possible to discern some hidden pattern shared by all serial killers?
With a new killer each week.
I see those wheels turning.
When a copycat killer emerges, the BAU will form a dark alliance with a familiar foe.
Elias, would you help us?
This season, evil is contagious.
Once it starts, it can't be stopped.
Criminal Minds Evolution. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus.